Let's chant verse 72.
Esha Brahmi Stiti Partha.
Nainam Prapya Vimuhyati.
Stitva Syamanta Kalepi.
Brahma Nirvana Mrchati.
Esha Brahmi Stitihi Partha. Na enam prapya vimuhyati. Stitva asyam antakale api brahma nirvanam richati. So for this again, sa esha jnana nishtha stuyate. So jnana nishtha is now praised in this last verse. He says, esha brahmi stitihi, all feminine nominatives, esha brahmi stitihi, brahmi and esha are adjectival to stitihi. So esha brahmi stitihi he parta. Na enam, accusative, one, prapya, indeclinable past participle, vimuhyati. Vimuhyati is, I think it's fourth pair samaipada. Stitva asyam, locative, antakale, locative, api, brahma nirvanam, 2-1, richati. Did I say 2-1 for enam? It's 2-1 if I didn't. So, Esha Brahmi Stitihi. This abode. We have to see what abode means, not really abode. So Esha Brahmi Stitihi. This abode of Brahman. This abode which is Brahman. Brahma. Okay. Now here, Brahmanishta, that nishta is from sta. So this is Brahmi, that which belongs to Brahman, Nishta. So it's another way of saying Brahmanishta. Brahma Stitihi is saying Brahmanishta. Okay. So this Brahmanishta, parta he parta, na enam prapya vimuhyati. If I do the vigraha, it goes like this. Enam prapya na vimuhyati. It's having gained this Brahmanishta. So we're talking about really the Jivan Mukta here, the person who has Jnananishta. It's now the Antakarana Shuddhi, that's Ishwara Arpana Buddhi, this Prasada Buddhi has done its job. Right? All these raga dveshas now have been negated. And so for such a person, having gained this Brahmanishta, not vimuhyati, does not become deluded. The idea is, okay, now I have this Brahmanishta, but can I lose it? Can it go away? Can I forget it? And that was Arjuna's big problem also, because he didn't have Brahmanishta. He was only a mumukshu and only had 2 hours of this vision, and he had a lot of raga dvesha and a lot of energy. His fear was, what's going to happen? You know, when I go out and I'm so concentrated and totally involved in this battle, what's going to happen to my knowledge? It's rather fragile right now. The idea here is, can this state of Brahmanishta be lost? Can I go back to my own samsaritvam? So he says, having gained this Brahmanishta, which means this knowledge is firm, I'm firmly rooted in this knowledge. That means all of my raga dvesha, all of the little ones inside, they're all fine. The raga dveshas are all of them have become dagda bijas. They're all burnt seeds. They're all just non-binding, and I have a lot of motivation, but nothing is hanging on to me. Why? Because of my knowledge. Because of my knowledge. Because of the time my mind has been able to spend, as a mumukshu, my mind has been able to spend with this knowledge. And so that nishta is there. I know it's no longer what we call jnana, jnanam with pratibandhikas. Pratibandhika jnanam. This is a kind of a big issue in some of the Vedanta. Is there such a thing as pratibandhika jnanam, knowledge with obstacles, or not? Yeah. And some people say there can't be. If you have knowledge, if you have self-knowledge, there can't be any obstructions to it because you know. But then this is what Swamiji says. I think it's even actually, if you go to my website, where there's Swamiji says all of these, we had all of these satsangs with Swamiji. I think there's even a really nice discussion on this pratibandhika jnanam. Because people say there's no such thing as this knowledge with obstacles, and yet, he said, and yet we experience that. So we accept that pratibandhika jnanam because we experience it. You would think if the knowledge is there and it is clear, then that should be the end of it. But that's not the end of it. It's not the end of it because we have an unconscious, we have habitual thinking, we have so many rifts in the mind. And so in spite of my knowledge, because another thing to understand. it's kind of like a cat stretching. we have to do something about it. Oh, it's two-way, I see. If we can just open. Oh, yeah, because it's getting a little more. Yeah. Good.
Closing the door.
Yeah, that's better because it's kind of disturbing. Yeah. Yeah, that'll help. That helps. Okay. I think that it's understanding just the habitual patterns of the mind that are all rooted in ajnana, in self-ignorance, is one thing to understand. And that takes some time for this knowledge to really penetrate through all areas of your mind. But another thing is that the unconscious, all of the little ones inside, all of the complexes that we have in the unconscious are associated with emotion. They're emotion laden. In fact, anything in the unconscious, if you want to know what its components are, emotions and images. That's the language of the unconscious. So if you want to get into the unconscious, both Freud and Jung would say the royal road to the unconscious is to follow the emotion. They also say to follow the dreams is one too. But follow your emotion to take you into to the source. Follow the emotion to the source. Where does it land? It lands right in the complex. It lands right in the little one. So that's another key now that I'm mentioning it. It's another key. It's another thing that's something that can become a sadhana for you, because when you have an emotional reaction, those emotional reactions aren't something orchestrated by you. They take place. They're produced. And so when you have an emotional reaction and you've learned how to turn your buddhi toward the reaction and say, what's really going on? What's that really about? There's a little one inside. We're dealing with something in the unconscious. Almost guaranteed, because reactions aren't something that are just produced out of the conscious mind. So we're tapping into something there, and we can go into dialogue with it. But so just think of this. My mind is clear. I have a shanta vritti. Everything is fine. My knowledge is clear. And all of a sudden, I'm overwhelmed by an emotion. Now, I have to know in terms of my knowledge, what to do with that. What is that? How to be with it? If that part of this teaching isn't taken care of, then for me, for the jignasu, for the mumukshu, that becomes like an obstacle Why am I having this reaction? Why is this type of thinking taking over me in spite of my knowledge? We say in spite of your knowledge is what makes it a pratibandhika. And so I have knowledge, but then this is all happening. I have knowledge, but I'm acting as an ajnani. I have knowledge, but I might as well as not. Okay. But you know what? That's a way to look at it. But I think also that if we look at it that way, we haven't gone deeply enough. Because I can have brahmanishta, which means that I can be with, without raga dvesha, I can be with even my raga dveshas. I can be with my success and failure, even my success and failure in reference to how I want to behave as a jnani. Shankara has one line of that a few verses back. It's in chapter 2. The line that says, that samatva buddhi, I remain the same in success and failure, in gain and non-gain. He says, even in success and failure, you have to have that samatva buddhi. But the samatva, you're thinking, or we would think, the samatva buddhi means I have samatva buddhi toward my success and failure. But we have to have samatva buddhi, that equipoise, even toward my success and failure in reference to my samatva buddhi. See what I mean? Because otherwise you are identified with the mind. That your buddhi has to be able to, as for the jnana nishtha, your buddhi is able to be with, you know, everything. Everything that you perceive internally and everything that you perceive externally, free of raga dvesha. And so even if your mind, because of what we call habitual ajnanam, means that you've been behaving this way for lifetimes, let alone this lifetime, and so because your mind gets triggered by some emotional riff of one sort or another, you know, and you find that the mind is reacting to that, if the buddhi is behind that and has the samatva buddhi, there's no problem. It's like otherwise you're saying, I have to have samatva buddhi. Does everybody know what samatva means? It means that equipoise where I'm not being torn by my raga dveshas. I have a shanta vritti. You know, I have that thought that the way that my mind is behaving, the vritti of my mind is peaceful, shanti. So what if you think about this and you think, I have a, I am quite okay. You know, I have a shanta vritti. I can kind of maintain a shanta vritti toward the world, but toward my own mind and my own emotions and the little ones inside, I have no shanta vritti. I have that. I don't. I have that. There's no samatva there. We don't even know, perhaps, that there should be samatva there. You know, that everything, let's put it like this. This is so important, at least maybe you all understand this now, but there's one time that I recall where nobody really got this. Swamiji got it at one time, and then he would talk about it. But there was a long time before we didn't even think about it, really. But it's such an important thing. When we're talking about that samatva buddhi, means that shanta vritti of the buddhi, you know, that is toward anything that is objectifiable. Not only this world is objectifiable through my sense organs, right? That's how I know this world and my body, to objectify them because I have sense organs. If you lost your sense organs, you know, knock on wood, you lost your sense organs, you would now have no experience of this physical body or the world. The sense organs allows you for that, to have that experience. And you only have that experience if the mind is using those sense organs as instruments. And so we say, yes, we have to have that samatva buddhi, that shanti, that neutralization of raga dvesha, making them all non-binding desires. I would like things to be like this, but no, it's fine. You know, let me just deal with what I have here. It's one, no problem. That samatva buddhi toward what I perceive external to myself. But what is really external to myself? What is external to the Atma, to the real me? What is external? What can be, external means what can be objectified. It's not just this world. It's not just this body. It's my sense organs. It's my mind. It's my emotions. It's the little ones I bring into consciousness. It is all my past memories. Anything that is objectifiable means the entire Ishwara. The entire Ishwara, everything in it and everything about you. That is all objectifiable. And so when we want the buddhi to have a summit to a buddhi, it's toward all those things. And so it's toward also, so this is what Shankara is bringing out here, it's toward also the successes and failures in reference to my antakarana shuddhi, my successes and failures, my trying to have this everything non-binding desires to have that prasada buddhi. You know, what if the prasada buddhi just goes up in smoke for the moment? It is gone. Okay, samat to buddhi. How do you act with that? How do you hold that when you're not living up to your expectations? You know. Okay, are you with me? You're not living up to your expectations. Let there be a samat to buddhi there. Okay, doesn't matter what the. Doesn't matter what is going on. Let that samat to buddhi be there. Let me be kind. Let me help. Let me just be a person who helps, inside and outside, and that's really really it. But now there's one other thing I just said. You're not living up to your expectations. That is raga dvesha, isn't it? I should be like this, not like this. You know, if I were like this, I would be so happy. But I'm not, and I'm so unhappy. I'm not. You know, and it's making me miserable. That doesn't help. It helps nobody. If I want to gain some capacity, even in terms of raga dvesha or in terms of the little ones or in terms of being a better person, a more loving person, a more caring person, it honestly, just think of it, it really does not help for your buddhi to say, "You're not a caring person." It doesn't help, you know. You're no good. You're not a caring person. How can you be like that? That's a critical person. And so now what do you have to do? You have to have a summit to a buddhi toward that critical person. It's okay. It's okay. You picked up this critical nature from your mom and dad. You know, it's not you now. You don't need to have that nature. You know, the samatha buddhi is always the last one who speaks, is the last one to speak. Because there's levels and levels and levels of not living up to this or not living up to that or wishing it would be like that or wishing it would be like that and getting frustrated and getting, you know, all of this. The samatha buddhi is the last one to speak, you know. And then that's a beautiful thing. That is Brahmanishta. But that is why in the chapter 13, Shankara says, when we're going through all of the values, what he says is, the only person who really knows if you're a jnani is your guru and you. Because until everything is kind of in harmony with everybody's projection of what jnani is supposed to be, you know. When you're acting out the role of a jnani, and I don't mean that facetiously, I mean where all of your behavior is kind and loving and non-threatening in any way to the world, then you can kind of trust that person as really knowing. But then you can't see what's going on inside, what kind of work a person is doing inside, and how they are handling their own mind, and how they're handling their own reactions, and their own, what they consider shortfalls, you know. Even considering yourself as having a shortfall or not living up to the mark is extremely unfair. If you think of it like this, did anybody have to take piano lessons? I mean, I used to have to take piano lessons for 6 years or so. Okay, so just imagine, you're having to do the scales. practice the scales, practice the scales, practice the scales. How long does it take? It's a lot of coordination, especially for a child, to get on. It takes a lot of practice. You don't get that right away. You work for it. You have to practice. Now, what if a little child does the scales once and says, I can't do the scales, I'm no good? That poor little thing. If the child feels like that, we've really done something wrong. You know? How many times do you have to do the scales, or what if you're trying to do it as an adult? How many times do you have to do those scales before they become second nature? You know? How many times, even say you're learning a foreign language, how long does it take for that language to become embodied? How long does it take for the different words that are using to become your words? It takes a long time. You have to stay with it. That's what we call mastery. Mastery means that you stay with something, you know, intently for 12 years in India. 12 years. You know, that's for it to really become yours, to really become embodied. So now we're gaining this knowledge and working on this Antakarana Shuddhi, and we're understanding so many things. And then the buddhi, understanding that, as part of that understanding, it has to understand that every single thing that goes on in your mind and in the, you know, the little ones inside, that's okay. You know why it's okay? Because you're a good person and you're doing your best and you're learning. That's why it's okay. If you were some evil monster or something and you're doing all these bad things, then we have to really try to make some more heavy-duty corrections, you know? But if they're trying to correct, then they're not even an evil monster. If they're trying to make corrections, that is good, you know? Say if we're truly trying to become a good person, and sometimes we get so depressed, or sometimes we get so hurt, or we get angry, or we get frustrated, you know, and fed up, and all of these emotions that come up out of frustration. There's nothing wrong with that. You just need a good mom. You need your mom and you need your dad, your inner mom and dad, your inner guru, to give you some love and support and tell you. It takes time, you know. You're doing so well. You're doing so well. You love what you're doing. You're a mumukshu. You can't, mumukshu, it's not possible. So it says throughout the Shastra in Panchadashi, this Vidyaranya, who wrote the Panchadashi, this is in chapter 7. He says, he's talking to the students and they've understood a certain amount, and he said something to this effect, because they'd understood too much. One wanted to go back to where he used to be, and he just said, I'm sorry, it's too late. It's too late. It's too late, because that knowledge is there. That mumukshutvam, the mumukshutvam itself is there. It's too late. Mumukshutvam, there's jnanam. In mumukshutvam, there's jnanam. You've recognized the truth of something. You can't not see that again, you know. It's too late. And then you get your teacher and this knowledge is taking place and you're gaining clarity. How can you not see now? You can't, it's like the example we use for this is if you see a snake on a rope, you're not seeing the rope, you're only seeing the snake. And you're responding and reacting to the snake, there's the snake. But when you see the rope, try to get the snake back. You just can't do it, you know. You can't do it. You can talk about it and we can teach about the rope and the snake and all of that. But when you saw the snake there, you actually saw it and all your emotions were on the snake. But once you see the rope, you can't get those kind of emotions, even though you can tell everybody all about it, you know? And this knowledge is like that. When that mumukshutvam comes, you're on a different path. You're no longer on the path of a samsari. You're on the path of a mumukshu, of somebody who needs to gain self-knowledge. And the psyche, once that starts, it can't go back to samsara. It's not possible, because that would take... You would have to do something against what you actually know. So it's not going to happen, you know. And so then when you're acting like you're a samsari, your mind feels down. it can feel down because I'm a mumukshu and I'm acting like a samsari. So I would say, how do you know you're acting like a samsari? How do you know? Well, you know because the buddhi has knowledge, right? And so you have to look at all of the growth of the mind and appreciate its struggles. It struggles to own up this knowledge. It's a very beautiful, very delicate, very gentle thing where the mind is unfolding like a growing and unfolding like a beautiful flower in slow motion, and you have to hold it and tend it, you know, with care and love. All of it. All of your successes and failures, all of it. That in fact is Brahmanishta. You can say it's Brahmanishta with Pratibandhikas from somebody else's viewpoint. But from my viewpoint, I don't see any Pratibandhika there because I'm being the same, I have the same Samatva Buddhi. Myself is still there as much as when there's some problem out here as it is when there's some problem in here. You see what I mean? So you can't split yourself off from Ishvara. That's what happened. You gain the, you think that you're the, that this knowledge is applying to everything you do, excluding your body, mind, sense organs, and that's not right. This knowledge applies to, and the Karma Yoga Buddhi, the Samatva Buddhi, all of this, the neutralization of Raga Dvesha, it applies to everything. And what is that? When it's a non-binding desire, what do I have then is objectivity. I can actually respond to the situation from myself, from the self that I am, from the Atma. If I have that objectivity, I respond to the situation from my being. And that's Brahmanishta. And how do I, if I'm responding to the situation from my being, what type of a response is that? It's just one of love, of care, of wanting to help. If Jivan Mukta, Swamiji once said, you know, for Jivan Mukta, somebody who's liberated, Jivan Mukta means a person who's liberated while living. Here and now you are liberated. It means you know so well yourself, the aham lands on you, you know. So for what is the drishti or the way of being in the world for a Jivan Mukta? It's just, I just want to help. You just want to help in the situation, whatever it is. What's being asked of me in the situation? Let me do that. Let me do it to the best of my ability. Why? Because there's no real raga dvesha. It's not that I need this to be happy or I need this to be happy. That's like being in a flood and trekking out to the well. It's not going to happen, you know. And so every time, even when the mind has some disruption or the unconscious has some disruption, when you make that split between you, you come into relationship with the herd or whatever, that buddhi is with you. It's with you. It's a spokesperson for you. It's living the life of the Atma from within Maya, right? Because that's itself. Otherwise, when that split isn't made, the emotion overwhelms the buddhi, and then the buddhi is acting out of that emotion. But as you gain that clarity and nishta, as the emotion comes, I'm with it. And that means I'm always coming from my own self. And so here, so when he says, it's very simple. He's saying, this Brahmanishta, you know, this having gained it, na vimuhyate, there's no more delusion for you. There's no, and another way of saying there's no more delusion, there's no way for you to forget either. It's not like you know yourself and now the mind forgets. The mind doesn't forget. The reason the mind doesn't forget is because you're never not there. You know, the mind can, this is another little tricky thing to recognize. When you know yourself, so you have that aha moment and you say, this is me, and you recognize me, the one who I can never get rid of, that I cannot objectify, who is always this very, that which is the most beloved, actually, this me that is the most beloved, I can never not know that, even when my mind is acting against that. I still know because it's like the pot having a temper tantrum and forgetting about the clay. Once it's known the clay, it knows itself. It cannot not know the clay, because that's all that it's there. It's not like when it has a temper tantrum, the clay runs away. Like, there's no running away of the clay. There's never, ever any running away of view of this, what I call the me experience. What makes me me? That's what makes me me is Brahman. And so there's no way to forget me, because there is never a time, no matter what the mind is doing, what the mind is feeling, what the mind is thinking, how immature it's acting, or how beautifully mature, how loving it's being, how irritating it's being, whatever, I am right there. So there's no, my mind can say, you're not acting like a jnani, or you should be more mature by this stage in your life, you know. But yourself is the one who's there watching this little conversation go on. Not really watching, being present to it. I'm not really watching anything, you know. But because of me, that little conversation is known, and I'm not changing, you know. So you cannot become deluded again, even when you're acting like you're deluded. Because yourself, the self that you know, is present, illumining that one, that the self that you know is the one present, illumining that kind of deluded, like, as though deluded behavior. And knowing, the buddhi knowing, this is really, you know, silly, or whatever it wants to say. Or maybe it's in a big reaction, and then you say, wow, this is really... it's really got me. But you're there. That's the thing. You're there. And you're never not there. So once you know yourself, that's it. Then he says, so stitva asyam, abiding in myself, brahma nirvanam ricchati. Brahma nirvanam is just moksha. Usually nirvanam is kind of an interesting word to use, because it's the... when we use this word nirvana, which is really not a Vedantic word, you actually very rarely see it, but here it is, this Brahma nirvana. Nirvana means the something is totally extinguished. Like, for instance, the example the Buddhists will use, if you blow out a candle flame, right? That flame is totally extinguished. It's gone. And so nirvana, we think of it as the total extinguishing of something. So here, abiding in yourself, you know, having gained this knowledge, having that being a brahmanishta, what is totally extinguished is ajnanam. That ignorance is extinguished. And so we have to say, what? The ignorance is extinguished. Yes, self-ignorance. And your part is that your mind was suffering from is extinguished. Okay, but the body's not extinguished, and the mind is not extinguished, the buddhi is not extinguished, the sense organs are not extinguished, you know? No, they're not, because they belong to Ishvara, right? The ajnanam is something that is subjective, that I can get rid of. Through knowledge, I eliminate my ajnanam. And so, not today, but maybe another time during this 2 weeks, we can have a discussion about ajnanam, ignorance. But what's so amazing about ignorance, the only thing like this, according to the Shastra, ignorance is beginningless. Your self-ignorance is beginningless. Any ignorance is beginningless. Now we're talking about self-ignorance. You don't have a prior condition. I had knowledge and then I became ignorant. That can't happen, you know, because knowledge is the opposite of ignorance. Knowledge destroys ignorance. And so if you had knowledge of something, how can there be ignorance? Ignorance won't come. Imagine it, that we use this example in reverse on the rope. I'm walking along. I clearly see a rope there as I'm walking along. I see a rope. The rope has 3 or 4 bends. It's about 1.5 inches. You know, and me and my friend walk by it and we see the rope. Okay. Can I become ignorant of the rope now? Can I say, let's pretend we don't see the rope so that we can imagine a snake on it? It's too late. We can't. We already have knowledge of the rope. You cannot get rope ignorance back. once that the knowledge is there. It's the same here. If I know myself, okay, let me pretend like I've never met myself, that I've never gained knowledge of myself. What would that be like? In fact, sometimes we have among ourselves, we have this conversation. What would it be like? And you say something like this, we all say about the same thing. It goes like this. I can't even remember what it was like to not know. I can't even remember because I can't get back there. You know, you can't remember. You can talk about it and anything, but you can't evoke that experience in yourself. Again, because the ajnanam that was responsible for that experience is not there, and so you can't get it back. No more than you can get the snake back, you know. You can, even when you have the habitual way of the mind's acting out in that, even that, it's acting out of ignorance, but the thing is, you're aware of that. And you already have the viveka between yourself and that ignorant behavior. You say, yeah, I'm just habitual ignorance. I'm just acting. My mind has always acted this way. And now even though I know, it still continues to act that way. That's why it has to act that way now and come up into my buddhi. You know, that does not, that now knows. And now with my buddhi, you know, aware of this behavior, then it goes, oh, it understands. But otherwise, it's just coming up as an unconscious riff. Just acting itself out, it comes up into knowledge, and now it starts, those things start to fall off. Otherwise, there are these ignorant behaviors just sitting there in the unconscious. But I'm not ignorant now. And so that self-ignorance, I can't get back, right, once it's gone. But before it's gone, it is beginningless. There's no beginning to ignorance. Let me use this example. Say somebody walks in the door right now. You've never met them, ever. And so then you look at them, and you know that you've never met them before, that this is your first experience of that person. But now, when did your ignorance of that person begin? It has no beginning. What does happen is you become aware of the removal of your ignorance, because once you have the experience of this person, now you have that experience. But before that, you never knew this person, you've never seen that person before. Also, the ignorance is beginningless, but it comes to an end. So that's our situation with self-knowledge. It's beginningless. It comes right along with the creation, you know, but it comes to an end. And when it comes to an end, it comes to an end. It's gone. So what he says here is, now, having that Brahmanishta, you know, having gained that delusion, ajnanam-born delusion, it cannot return. So here, abiding now in that Brahmanishta, my mind, my buddhi, you know, abiding in that state of Brahmanishta, another problem, which Shankara talks about. We can't say state of Brahmanishta as though there's a state that can be left. However, my being is not differentiated from my mind and the states of mind that I have. So now these states of mind are recognizing that there is another state, which is not a state. It's my being which is present to all of these other states. So this state that we call this abiding in Brahmanishta, right, is not a state that can come and go. It's the adhishtana of all states, but it's usually missed, right? And so we just say, like this, there's a waking, dream, and deep sleep state. But what about the one who is present to the waking, dream, and deep sleep? This is the Mandukya Upanishad. Just as waking state, dream state, deep sleep state, this is what every jiva goes through in a day cycle. Okay? But they don't recognize that those three states are taking place in me. I'm the adhishtana. I'm the self that illumines all of that. So I'm the fourth state. It's called turiya. But being the fourth state is not really the same as any of the other three states, because I'm the one as the adhishtana, the self, the being in whom all of these states take place. So what he says here, you know, abiding, stitva, having that nishta in that stiti, in that Brahmanishta, right, which is likened to a state, you can say, He says, then that person gains Brahman Nirvana. Means that Ajnanam is completely gone. I just abide as Brahman. That's moksha. That is moksha. I am only Brahman. I'm only Brahman. Then he says, Antakale Api. The person who becomes a Brahmanishta, even an old age. Even at an old age. Swamiji says in his commentary, and Shankara has a couple of lines on this too. Even say you're old, like you're 85 or 90, and you're just kind of hobbling around, or you've done yoga and so you can still walk. You can still walk and you still have a straight back and, you know, you can get up out of the chair and everything. You are 90, 95 years old. And, or like Marjorie, our dear, dear student in my wonderful Marjorie in you know, the kind of class. She's amazing. She's in her 80s. And she's losing her hearing. We're doing everything to save it, but she's losing her hearing. She'll say sometimes, I wish I could have come to this knowledge earlier. But I'm here now. I'm here now. You know? And she gets this knowledge as well as anybody else. Yourself is not growing old. Your mind is not away from yourself, you know. Your mind doesn't need your eyes, you know. If you can do sign language and you're deaf, you can get it through sign language as long as your teacher's a jnani. Your teacher knows and can teach. If you can't see, you know, or you can't hear, your mind is available, then you can gain this knowledge. You just need to be a mumukshu. You need yourself is there, so there's no problem there. You need a mind that is able to hear, to be able to receive this, you know. And if you're a mumukshu, it doesn't make any difference how old you are. You can be way, way at the end of life and gain jnana nishta. You could gain jnana nishta in a couple of weeks, depending on how much you have assimilated your experience. You know, like Shweta Ketu. You know, Swamiji tells the story of, I think it was Pariksit. I don't know the story so well, but he had been bitten by a snake and he had 1 week to live. He was given a curse, but he only had 1 week to live. And he went and told, I forget who it was, the son of one of the people who was reciting the Ramayana to everyone, the beginning of the Ramayana. And that person just laughed, and he said, oh boy, I wish I knew that I could live for a week. If I knew for sure that I can live for a week, you know, that would be amazing. I don't even know if I'll be alive in 10 minutes from now. I have no idea, really. So you should feel blessed that you have a whole week. And then he goes, and you can gain Brahmajnanam. You can gain Jnananishta in a week. It's no problem. You need Antakarana Shuddhi for that, right? You need to have assimilated your experiences. Your life has to be the life of a dharmi. Whether you became very dharmic in the later part of life, you know, that mumukshutvam is there, you have that antakarana shuddhi, you no longer are enamored by doing this and doing this, so I can have this experience and have this experience, and, you know, how do I want to have all these experiences before I die? Well, you're not a mumukshu. But say you are, and you're old, and you've had so much life experience, you know. If you lived your life well and you have life experience, your mind can be completely ready for this and you can gain this knowledge and be free, you know. And if you were born and you were a mumukshu and gaining knowledge in the last part of your life but didn't have the clarity, like Arjuna was so afraid, Krishna says you'll just be born again and hook up with the jnanis, be born into a family of jnanis, and just pick up where you left off. Or if there's some karmas you have to fulfill, you know, you'll be reunited with, fulfill those karmas, you'll be reignited with a jnani, with your teacher, with a teacher, and pick up where you left off. But here the point is not what they're saying. It doesn't matter what age you are. Even at a very old age, you can get this knowledge completely, you can get that Brahmanishta. And then Shankara says, what to speak of a young person? you know, who can still walk and still hear and has all their sense organs, everything, and has all of that energy, you think they can't get this knowledge? This knowledge is meant for a mumukshu here and now. That's why Jivan Mukta, a Brahmanishta, here itself, now, because I am here, the teacher is here, you know, it's not like I'm not here. That's another important thing. I am here, the teacher is here, the mumukshutvam is here, I have these little problems, I work those out, and I gain jnana nishtha in my knowledge. It's not a big thing. There is no bigger thing. There's no bigger thing, really, than to know my own self. But it's also not that self is far away from me. You know, far away from me. Something that only a few people are allowed to gain. It's not like that at all. If you're a mumukshu, you will get it. You will get it if you're a mumukshu. But there's hardly any mumukshus. That's true. There's not supposed to be a lot of mumukshus. Nobody, Bhagavan doesn't expect there to be a lot of mumukshus. You know? No, really. It's considered very rare to be a mumukshu. It's not expected there to be a lot of mumukshus. You know? Swamiji, I think I've told this story once, he was speaking to like 10,000 or more people in Bombay. And those people were just, you couldn't barely see the end. There's these speakers in a huge park all the way down. Swamiji was like, if you went all the way down, he'd just be a little person, little tiny person up on the stage, because they were so far away. But Swamiji said, you know, really, I'm only really talking to a handful of people in the front rows. What he meant were the mumukshus. But that knowledge is still highly inspiring and beautiful, and to be with your guru and a mahatma like that is so inspiring. But not necessarily a mumukshu at all. Mumukshu is very rare. That's why the mumukshus are so honored and treated like precious jewels, as the teachers are also, in the tradition, I mean. But you're a mumukshu. You know, believe me, there's no way you would be sitting here for a month, let alone a week, let alone 2 days, you'd be gone the second day. Because there's no one inside that's ready for this subject matter. It'd be boring. Your heart isn't, your being isn't, those aren't your questions. You know? When they are your questions, it's too late. This is a good thing. It's too late. The flower has sprouted and is starting to unfold. Nothing we can do except just enjoy the very beautiful blessing of it. So, Om Tat Sat. Om Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om. So, tomorrow we start chapter 3. I'm kind of proud of us. We're moving right along. It's good. Chapter 3 is also a very beautiful chapter. So good for us. Okay.